Hello and welcome to Sticky Wickets. In quite a busy week in cricket, this will be a packed podcast talking about the IPL, the women's and men's Big Bash, and some games, as well as this is a white ball special. So here with me today is Toby. Toby, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. How are you?
I'm in a really good mood. It's Freddie Friday, as you can see on our Instagram page. There'll be a bit of a link, and we'll talk to Freddie and myself a lot about Freddie Flintoff a bit later. But the IPL came to a close with a fifth title in 8 years for the Mumbai Indians. What are your thoughts on the Mumbai Indians season, Toby?
Oh, it was great, really. I think they perhaps think of the quickest start. I think Delhi Capitals leading for quite a while, but they were the best team the whole way. And I think first team to retain the title since 2011 with Chennai. I think they've just got such a balanced side. They did really well with their overseas players. Obviously, De Kock at the top of the order, once he came in and started doing well, scoring tons of runs. Pollard, I mean, what a great player, great finisher to have. And Trent Bolt and Bumrah to for the bowling. It's a great team, really, all round.
Yeah, it does sound like a very good team. And just some of the names there, just they really do stand out as world-quality players. Now, one player who did make his mark in the IPL this year was Jofra Archer, who was named MVP of the tournament. How impressed were you, Toby, with his tournament?
Yeah, no, I just thought it was great, really. I mean, he perhaps didn't have the greatest summer. I think a lot of people were saying it could have gone a lot worse. His career perhaps might have taken a bit of a hit if he hadn't found the form in the IPL. But it was just phenomenal, really. When you look at his stats as a bowler compared to the rest of the Rajasthan Royals team, his average was 18, I think, with the ball. Took 20 wickets, a strike rate of 16, which is just fantastic. Whereas I think the rest of them were averaging about 50 or something with the ball, going at like over 10 and over with economy, which shows how great a bowler he is, that Rajasthan actually managed to have a chance of getting through to that semi-final with such a sort of perhaps weak bowling attack and with him just carrying them through. What do you think, Dom? How did you think he's performed, and what do you think might happen in the next few years before the World Cup?
Well, I think his performance has really levelled him down to being a T20 player as well as an ODI player, as well as a great test player. And I think this is the first time he's really shone to an MVP level on a T20 stage. He was very good in the Big Bash for the Hurricanes a few years ago. But yeah, it's really promising signs to see from such a player who is so recognisable to the English fans, because he is so different to... He really does stand out with his dreadlocks. And I think it's really important. Emily Rainford-Brent has talked a lot about getting black British players back into the game. And I really do think Jofra Archer could be the answer to getting a more diverse game, which is something we both want, isn't it?
100%, yeah. And I think it's great to see, because he's always been there as a sort of a moments kind of guy. He always does like an unbelievable catch or an unbelievable ball, like when he hit Steve Smith. And that spell to Steve Smith was fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I think this was perhaps the most consistent he's been over a long period. I think 14 matches he played in the tournament, and it just in pretty much every game he did something. He was always very economical or taking wickets, and it was just great to see his consistency, I thought.
Yeah, being economical in T20 really does seem to be the way now. Rather than taking wickets, it's more, can you just hold up an end and create wickets for someone else? But yeah, very good. Well done to Jofra Archer. We're all proud of you back home. So the last big cricket event with crowds before lockdown was the World Cup final for the girls in front of an astonishing 86,000 at the MCG, which was a massive moment in women's cricket. But the glory was sort of dampened by the COVID-19 lockdown, which occurred very soon after. But in Australia, the legacy begins now with the Women's Big Bash beginning down under, with the Melbourne clubs having varying luck, with the Renegades winning just one of their games, where the Melbourne Stars have been undefeated, with Nat Skiver leading the way with 5 successive wins. The Stars have been sensational in the tournament, winning by 8 wickets, 7 wickets, 8 wickets again, 23 wickets, and then 5 wickets in the T20 matches. Just to look at the tournament through an English sense, here are the girls representing England down under this winter. Catherine Brunt and Nat Skiver in the magnificent Melbourne Star side. Sarah Glenn and Amy Jones are in Perth Scorchers. Tammy Beaumont and Heather Knight are in the Sydney Thunder teams. How impressed have you been, Toby, with some of the English girls' performances in the tournament?
Oh yeah, I think as usual, there's always a few standouts with the girls. I think obviously Nat Siver and Heather Knight, probably two of the more recognisable names there, have both been smashing it as usual. I mean, Heather Knight from eight matches, averaging 50 with the bat, 251 runs at a strike rate of 130, which has been fantastic. And obviously her part-time off-spin been really useful with eight wickets at an average of eight, which is just flipping amazing with economy 5.9. I mean, there's not much more you'd ask for her. And I mean, she's the only English player to score 100 in all international formats, men's or women's. And I think it shows how great a player she is. And then obviously Nat Siver, seven matches. Batting's not necessarily been quite as good as she might have hoped, with 69 runs at 23. Strike rate, still very good though, 113. But her bowling's been fantastic. I think she's topping the most wickets at the moment with 12. An average of nine, an economy of 6.47, strike rate 8.5. She's just, as usual, just one of the sort of the classiest women's players at the moment, I think. Perhaps some of the other girls have struggled a bit more. Tammy Beaumont, I know, is only averaging about 10 or 11, and Catherine Brunt averaging about 40 with the ball. But I think they'll both be hoping to keep going. And it's quite a long tournament, I think, the Big Bash, particularly compared to the IPL, which has obviously just happened, the three-team tournament, where I think it was Sophie Eccleston stood out quite a lot there. So it'll be good to see how it progresses. Have you been watching much of it, Dom? Or
a little bit here and there? I sort of got into the England women's game when they won that World Cup. Mm-hmm. And actually, I wasn't there to actually see the game or watch it, because I was actually watching Birmingham versus Derbyshire in a Tower T20. But I really do think the women's form of the game is so important, because there isn't as that level of sexism in the fans of cricket. Like there isn't, dare I say, at football, where there's a sort of a look down upon women's sport. But yeah, I've been really impressed with Nat Siver, or Skiver, how you want to pronounce it. And I remember England being so unlucky with the rain just before in the World Cup, knocking them out of the semi-finals rather than actually playing the game. But yeah, it's always good to see English girls like Catherine Brunt and Nat Skiver doing really well for themselves. The men's Big Bash is coming in a month or so. Recently, Johnny Bairstow has signed for Sydney Thunder, the first time Bairstow will play in the tournament. There are a few other English stars at the Big Bash. So we've got World Cup opening batsman and your favourite, I believe, Toby, Jason Roy, will be joining Pakistan, who's played two international T20s for England, and they will go to the Perth Scorchers. T20 number one batsman in the world, according to the ICC, Dawid Malan, will play for the Hobart Hurricanes in that purple kit, who will be joined by Wills Jacks, not Jack Wills, who captained England under-19 World Cup squad. Jack signed for Hobart yesterday. Alex Hales, Nottinghamshire lad, if you're listening to the podcast, and hopefully crowds are back, you might be able to see him just at the start of next summer if you go to Nottinghamshire Uni, who scored the first and only international T20 century, will play with Bairstow at Sydney Thunder. Tom Banton, who has now played nine international T20s for England, making his debut a little over a year ago, will play for Brisbane Heat. And little baby Tom Curran will stay in pink again, moving from Rajasthan Royals to the Sydney Sixers. What England players do you think will have the biggest impact this year in the league, Toby?
Well, first of all, I'll say I can't wait to see the Big Bash this year. There's so many England players. I think it's probably 10, 12, something. Huge number, really. And I think that's with Pakistan IPL, Pakistan Premier League, coming to a finish at a similar time. I'd say probably, obviously, local boy Will Jacks, you mentioned, captain England under-19s, local Surrey boy. I've just seen him, over the last few years, just progress hugely. He first came in, I think, two seasons ago, maybe, last season. And it sort of came a bit of a pinch hitter, just came in, massive strike rate, just blasting the ball everywhere. And now, particularly last season, just become a just destructive top-order batsman. He opened a lot with Hashim Amla at Surrey this year, and he reminds me a lot of the sort of young Jason Roy, and I could see him a lot playing for England over the next few years once Roy, Bairstow, Butler come to an end their careers. I mean, just looking at the blast this season, he played 12 innings, 13 matches, I think it was the most matches of the whole competition, averaged 34 with about a strike rate of 150, and his bowling as well has come into his own. He's got 16 average of 16 with 13 wickets, just fantastic. Also, I mean, Phil Salt, perhaps not as a surprise, but one of the sort of lesser known players getting a call up, scored a great 100, I think, in the ODI warm-up against Ireland, So I'm looking forward to see him. And then, of course, both Liam Livingstone and Tom Banton, both young English players hoping to secure a spot in the T20 side with the World Cup around the corner. Both played in the Big Bash last year. Livingstone, 14 innings, average of 30. And I think he's got the second highest number of sixes with 27 in the tournament. Yet he played three less games than Stoinis, who only got one more six. So he's just a fantastic six hitter, Liam Livingstone. And Tom Banton, similar, with 16 sixes from his seven innings, an average of 31 and a strike rate of 176, which is just amazing last year. And then, as you mentioned at the end, Alex Hales, highest averaging Englishman last year, Notts boy, averaging 38.4, a strike rate of just under 150. So, I mean, can't really wait to see how they all go. Who are you looking forward to seeing? Obviously, you're a Notts fan. Alex Hales, I assume, is up there.
Alex Hales, who, I'm going to be honest, has blown his chance a bit with England, but he's still one of the best international level players England, I think, ever produced in the one-day format. I'm really excited to see what Will perform. Because can I ask you a question as a Surrey fan? Do you see him almost being in the test side, or do you think he'll be just an one-day sort of specialist for England?
I struggle to see. This year with the County Championship, he played, I'm pretty sure, most of the games, I think six games maybe for Surrey, and was looking very solid. He sort of batted four or five, I think, in the middle order, and he's a very aggressive batsman. I think I definitely see him playing a lot of T20 and ODI games for England, probably at the top of the order, maybe even as a finisher, because he's just such a good six hitter and a boundary scorer. But I could see him, particularly if he progresses, maybe gets a few more opportunities in the Red Bull side. I could see him playing for England. I think it was the year before last when Surrey won it, he didn't get much of an opportunity because we had such a strong side and very few of our players playing for England. Whereas last summer, obviously we had Pope, Burns, Folkes was in the squad, and then Roy and Curran were both in the White Bull side. So he had a lot more opportunity. And I think he really took it and was quite hard to drop from the side a lot of the time. So possibly in the future we might see him playing Red Bull, but I think he's going to be mainly a White Bull specialist, I'd say.
That's good to hear, because I do think he sounds like a good sort of exciting player. And every time that sort of I'm not sure if we can call him a generational talent yet, but anytime someone can capture the imagination of a sort of tournament or a big bash, like hopefully Jacks will do, it's exciting to see. Oh dear. So there might be crowds of up to 25,000 for the Big Bash. How excited are you to be seeing cricket in front of big crowds? You are a Surrey fan, so you might have been able to see some of the games where there was 1,000 and 2,000 fans, but 25,000 fans, do you think that'll change the game from how it is usually without fans now?
I think perhaps. I mean, even when I saw, I was lucky to see one of the games with 1,000 fans, one of the testers at Surrey. And even just with a few extra fans, the atmosphere just seems so different from when it's completely empty. And I mean, 25,000, that's probably the most that Surrey would be able to fit in the Oval. So it's still going to be a huge, huge number of people in there. And if they can socially distance, then it'll be great to see. And I mean, I just can't wait to see the bash. I'm quite lazy, so I don't normally get up enough in the early mornings to see it. But I do come, when I come down in the mornings, flick on the TV, see who's playing, catch the last few overs if I'm up early enough. So I reckon there'll be a lot of highlights and maybe just a few recordings of the matches similar to the IPL if I can. So
I do love the Big Bash. I think Christmas starts when the Big Bash sort of starts, because despite it being in Australia, the time difference allows it just to be in the morning. So if I remember when I used to get on holidays from school, it usually used to coincide with that. So the first morning I'd always run up to the living room and watch it, get my Sydney Thunder shirt on, because Owen Morgan used to play for them. And I think we've documented how much I used to love Owen Morgan. Going back to cricket now, Mitchell Starc will return to the Big Bash after a 6-year absence, but Starc got into a little bit of controversy. He was caught throwing his bat after being left stranded 86 not out in a Sheffield Shield game, as the captain declared a little bit early. Toby, a bit of a personal one here. Have you ever been caught throwing your bat, or any? What's your biggest temper tantrum after a wicket? Or
I'd say I'm normally reasonably calm after getting out. I don't think I've thrown a bat. I normally just sort of flatten the stumps and headbutt the bowler instead. Yeah, so it's normally a bit more relaxed, I'd say, than Stark. What about you, Dom? Anything bad from you?
Usually I can either go two ways. I can either just go very much into my shell, or I can just be like, oh, that's good ball. But almost like Kevin Peterson, if you watch the edge, he just goes, yep, good ball. And just tucks his. But there was one time, it was the last time I thought I was going to play for my school, and I got run out by a lad who was playing on a year above. And I was so fuming. I threw my helmet on the ground when I got back to the, not pavilion, because obviously it was a school game, just the grass outside the boundary. Threw my helmet down. My mate tried to be nice to me and say, oh, mate, it doesn't matter. I'm sure maybe next year you might get a game or something. I just was a bit rude to him and said, mate, you don't know what you're talking about. All you do is edge balls for runs. And he managed to win the game for us, playing the best he's ever played. So I think that's a lesson to anyone. Just don't be rude to any player, because you never know what can happen. But yeah, usually as a lower end batsman, I just sort of used to accept, yep, I'm not that good. In some other international news, Zimbabwe all round Elton Chiumbura Bung retired from international cricket. He played 213 ODIs, 57 T20s for Zimbabwe. Elton took 138 wickets for Zimbabwe, as well as scoring 6,000 international runs. So congrats to Elton. Now, it is Freddie Friday, as you'll see. I think everyone needed a bit of a boost this Friday. So me and Toby decided it was Freddie Friday, celebrating one of England's great all-rounders. So, Toby, what's your favourite Freddie Flintoff moment?
I mean, there's just so many. I think, obviously, the perhaps most well-known one was when he ran out. I was at Ponting or someone and just stood there, arms spread, just taking in the atmosphere, the Ashes. And it's just that's just a moment and a half. And I think struggle to look past that. It's just classic Freddie. Yeah. And I think it's just a great player, really. And I think Freddie Friday is every Friday, and we'll see how it goes from there.
Yeah. I think he's like Ben Stokes is becoming, and I think Jofra Archer could become one of those players that, no matter if you have any interest in cricket, you know him. So I really do think the stuff he's done with boxing, which maybe not his finest hour, a league of their own, and the Ashes in 2005 really cemented him as a character. My favourite memory's got to be him singing on the boundaries of the Big Bash. In the Big Bash, sometimes they have calls, if you don't know, if you're new to cricket. Sometimes the commentators can talk to the players. Now, Freddie Flintoff was often on the mic on the pitch, so he started singing Elvis, because apparently when he used to work in Woolworths, he used to just love listening to Elvis. So it gets the last sort of overs of the game and he's singing in the ghetto. It's a really beautiful moment. If you're just getting into cricket, watch it and it'll make you fall in love with Super Fred. So me and Toby, we discussed this a little bit off air. We love a good cricket game that isn't actually cricket, but it's a little bit of a quiz. So we've got a new game for you called Higher or Mower. Yes, Mowing Alley is based around this game. This is some people might describe this as matching-esque. I know Toby does.
Yes.
If you don't understand, listen to one episode of Tailenders and you'll very much understand. So hello and welcome to Higher or Mower.
Thank you for having us on Higher or Mower.
I will give you a stat about another international cricket player, such as catches, wickets, or runs. All you have to guess is, will that famous cricketer have a higher... Oh, hang on, I've got this wrong. We will give you a stat about catches, wickets, or runs from a famous cricketer, and you have to guess whether England star Moeen Ali has a higher or mower, see what we did there, corresponding stat. So a little test run would be, Alistair Cook has one test match wicket. Is Moeen Ali's test wicket haul higher or mower? You would say
it's higher.
Oh, well done. That's slightly. One. So four more questions to go. Okay. Should we set the? I'm going to say you need four to win. Okay. Four to off the final five balls. All right. Freddie Flintoff, it is Super Freddie Friday, has 226 test match wickets. Is Moeen Ali's test match wicket haul higher or mower?
I think it's mower. I'm going to go with.
It is Moa, 181 test match wickets for Mo. So Ben Stokes, the man who captured everyone's hearts in 2019, high score in ODI cricket is 102. Is that higher or Moa than Moeen Ali's personal best in ODI cricket?
This is a tough one, because Whenever someone says Onai high score, I see him smashing it everywhere, and I feel like he's got 100. And I think it must be higher, I think, than 102. So I'm going to go higher.
102. Yep, you go 2 for none. So Moeen Ali's high score is 128. Now, Shane Warne, you might have seen him from hair removal adverts, or you might have seen him playing cricket, you never know, has 3,154 test match runs with a high score of 98. Is Shane Warne's overall test runs higher or lower, or higher or lower, sorry. Oh, we almost forgot the purpose of this game, than Moeen Ali's test match runs?
Ooh, this is a really tough one. How many did you get? 3,000, you say?
3,154 runs for the Shane.
Okay, I'm going to go with, I think Moeen Ali has less runs, so Moa.
And you're correct, 3 for none. Will he get this? Now, Alistair Cook has 343 ODI fours. Is that higher or Moa than Moeen Ali?
Oh my God, they're getting tougher and tougher, Tom.
This is the super over.
Can he do it?
You have to do this by the barest of all margins.
Got to draw in my inner Joffrey here, I think. Okay, we'll go. I'm going to go with higher. I think Moeen Ali has more fours.
No, he's fallen in the final over. Oh, no. Moeen Ali has 157 ODI fours. He has a lot more sixes, but he didn't have fours. Oh, what a way to end. And dear listener, if you can just see the look on Toby's face, he's actually gutted.
I think I'm going to have to finish the podcast. I think
runs per ODI. Well, that you're right. You're gutted, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I think that could be the end of Sticky Wicket. I'm going to have to just go and sit on my bed, just think about what's happened and
sit in the dressing
room. That could be it.
Just headbutting bowlers. I think that's the best place to end Sticky Wickets this week. Toby, thank you so much for having a great laugh with us. We hope this has raised your lockdown mood. That's all from Sticky Wickets. Go well.
Cheers.